Hello and welcome to the show that's still no good at Football Manager. As rounds one and two of the FA Cup inspired championship specials here, this week we focus our attention on leagues one and two instead. Who's going up, who's going down, and how much time's left for beleaguered Phil Brown? We sent Matt Stanger to Oxford United, and there was no room at the inn. We've always got room for Ali Maxwell though, and Joe Crilly, and the Fan League, and the anthemic roundup music. It's all on the Totally Football League show in association with William Hill. Oh, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Morning, Ian.
Ah, that's Ali and Matt there. Good morning, Joe.
Hello.
There you are, wide awake in the corner. Proud day for you, Matt. It's been a... You've had a colourful history of predictions, but on last week's show you said, and I quote, anyone can beat Arsenal, and so it proved.
I'm happy with that one. Thank you, Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, they did very, very well. Ali, looking resplendent in your France 98 shirt.
Certainly am. Thanks, Ian.
How are you?
Very well. Always better once I've had the fashion nod of a fashionista like yourself, a sartorial, elegant genius.
We've got a lot of stuff on the show today. We've got news and brief, we've got the Fan League, and we're going to be taking a much closer look at League One and League Two because Championship's always had far more focus. Let's go then to our sexy news section with its sexy news music. There was far too much excitement at the City Ground on Sunday, so Nottingham Forest have done their best to address this immediately by appointing Aita Karanka as their new boss. The 44-year-old Spaniard's been kicking his heels since his dismissal from the Riverside in March last year, and he'll replace Mark Warburton with his new team 14th in the table. Sheffield Wednesday have got a new manager too, Jos Lahouque. That's how we're going with it. Rafa Honigstein gave his verdict on the Totally Football show yesterday.
It's a really interesting appointment because he's basically been off the radar since 2015 when he left Hertha. I'd be struggling to tell you, you know, what his unique talent is. I think he is just a manager that gets a team to play to their strengths. He's very, very pragmatic. I mean, there weren't free-flowing, sort of expensive sides. He was... there are two schools in Dutch football. One is the Cruyffian, and, you know, we have the possession and we play football, and the other is sort of the Feyenoord, Rotterdam. We'll win by any means necessary and we'll kick you a little bit. And he is more on that side. Not in the sense of being dirty, but very ultra pragmatic, just setting the team up not to concede. I like to play on the counter attack, and it's a really interesting appointment because since 2015 he's basically not been in a job, and to go back to a manager 2 years later and think of him, oh, what about this guy? I think it could be quite smart. I mean, he's a very solid, experienced manager, I think is what you can say.
Derby County say they would aggressively reject any approach from Stoke for manager Gary Rowett. His current contract contains a seven-figure compensation clause. It runs to 2019 and it includes large bonuses for getting the Rams back in the big league. Why he'd want to swap all that for Ryan Shawcross and a swift return to the Championship is anyone's guess. Can you tell that Arsenal supporting producer Tyre wrote this? It's back, sack or crack for stressed-out Fulham boss Slavisa Jokanović this week. He's lashed out at his paymasters and dared them to dismiss him. Will they take the bait? We don't have any clear targets for the direction of the club, he roared. I'm really disappointed with our situation. I expect the club will change their opinion. I don't know if we don't have the money or don't want to spend the money, but we're not competitive enough for the period in front of us. A solution? Probably an option that the club must be thinking about sacking the coach. Well, this can be a good option for the club. Blimey. The 18-month relationship between Southend United and Niall Ranger ended last week, 17 months later than I expected, after the club terminated his contract due to recurring disciplinary issues. A statement said those issues included timekeeping, which undermines both the unity of the group and the management. I didn't see that one coming. Wolves' new number 9, Rafa Mir, could have left for Real Madrid instead of the Championship winners-elect, and he wasn't shy about introducing himself to his new fans, as well as showing Los Blancos what they were missing. A few moments into his 13-minute cameo against Swansea over the weekend, he took a casual pop at goal from a full 40 yards. Mir explained that, "Nuno played a big part of my decision to come here. Wolves is a big project, and it's an exciting challenge to be a part of it." And that is your news in brief. Matt, let's start with Karanka at Forest. Did you see that coming?
Yeah, well, he was a favourite, wasn't he?
Is it wise, though?
It's a big coup in some ways. He's got strong coaching pedigree and took Borough up to the Premier League, of course. But I think there's a lot of potential for it to go wrong as well. He didn't have a huge record of bringing through young players up on Teesside. He obviously helped develop Ben Gibson, brought Adam Reach through, but that's what the job is at Nottingham Forest, essentially, after we saw those young players perform so well against Arsenal.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, you watch Forest at any point this season, never mind what happened on Sunday. And for all their weaknesses and inconsistencies, they're a young, vibrant attacking team. Is Karanka going to change all that?
Well, that's what it's going to be interesting to see, because there was no real refined attacking approach, I don't think, at Middlesbrough. But what he did do, as Matt touched on there, was build one of the best defences we've ever seen at that level. I think in his league games at Championship level with Borough, only 92 goals conceded in 122 league games. So if you can do that at any level, you're going to be up there. The question is whether Nottingham Forest's personnel, whether their squad lends itself to that style of play. And at the moment, it doesn't look like that. So what I'm interested in is what are the expectations for the rest of this season? Is it just really to just steer them nicely clear of relegation and then start building for next season? There's still a long way to go this season. So you've got to hope that the board know what they're doing with this appointment. And you've got to hope as well, if you're the fans, that he will keep playing these exciting young players that are doing so well.
It's a big test in his first game, isn't it? Aston Villa at the City Ground this weekend in a tea time kickoff, and obviously that's one that you want to win. And if he does, he'll have the fans on side straight away.
Well, absolutely. I'll tell you what, we talk about expectations. Lehukai at Wednesday. Certainly, no one saw this one coming. Ali, is he in really a relegation battle more than chasing for the playoffs?
Yeah, I suppose so. I don't think he's really in either. Particularly, I'm not sure he's mired in a relegation battle, and he's certainly not close to the playoffs. So, a little bit like Forrest, I wouldn't be too worried that they'll get dragged in, unless things just start terribly for either Karanka or Lehukai, and then of course you're going to start worrying and panicking. But it is an interesting appointment, as you say, out of left field. But then again, Carlos Carvajal was as well, so maybe this is the sort of MO of this particular board.
And he has got a certain type, hasn't he, Matt?
Yeah, well, I've been waiting for this moment for years, actually, and being the UK's foremost Jos Lehukai expert. And, of course, I know all about his record in Germany, where he won promotion three times to the Bundesliga with Mönchengladbach, Augsburg and Hertha Berlin. So that's clearly what Sheffield Wednesday have taken a look at, even though he's had that breakout of the game, like Rafa said. And I think it'll be more towards building next season, really, and looking to get back into the promotion push then.
Do you think he'll get this year as a transitional year? Get his feet under the table? No serious expectations?
Absolutely. They can't really be targeting promotion at this stage, given they're 13 points off sixth place.
All right. Derby are targeting promotion, but they appear to be facing a battle to keep their manager, Gary Rowett, heavily linked with Stoke. Matt, what would you do if you were him?
I think it's a really difficult decision, to be honest, but I would definitely be tempted by that jump up to the Premier League. I think Guy Rowett would definitely back himself. He's done a great job at Derby, got them in second, and they're in a brilliant run of form at the moment. But he took over Birmingham when they were 23rd in the Championship in October 2014, and he finished 10th that season. So he'll certainly be confident if he joins Stoke, he'd be able to keep them up this season. And the big risk to him, really, is the damage to his reputation, because there's a lot of goodwill towards Guy Rowett after what happened at Birmingham. I think people look at him as the manager that was wronged by that club. And, you know, he's gone on to have success at Derby, and what a mistake that was proven to be by Birmingham. But obviously, if he jumps ship now at this stage, halfway through the season, then he'll lose all of that favour and start with a clean slate, really. So I think, yeah, it's a gamble, though, to stay at Derby also, because we look at Mel Morris's record of sticking with managers in the past, and you only have to ask Steve McLaren about whether it's a good idea to hang on there for too long. But the other thing as well, I think, is you can't really underestimate the difference in the size of these two clubs, because as fate would have it, Derby and Stoke traded places in 2007, 2008, and Stoke have benefited from a decade now of extra TV revenue in the Premier League. And Rowett, if he joins them, would have the benefit of managing four Champions League winners, of course.
What? Four Champions League winners at Stoke?
Yeah, Afellay, Shaqiri, Hesse and Darren Fletcher. And if you recall, Muniesa and Bojan, who are both out on loan in Spain at the moment, it could make it six.
Yeah, Peter Crouch has got a runners-up medal as well. You'd probably get an 11 out of that. Ali, what would you do?
I think I would stay. I think they're in an excellent position, and he to be honest, regardless of what I think, he appears to be quite focused on the project. Last night, I think it was, or yesterday, Derby released a half an hour chat between Gary Rowett and Rams TV. And, you know, over the course of half an hour, he's outlining his philosophy, his vision, reviewing the first half of the season. And he does so with a real sort of steely focus. It's the type of thing that you wouldn't expect a club to release if they were really worried that he'd be leaving. So, you know, they're going to offer him the world as well, I think, Derby, because they're in an excellent position. I don't think anyone was expecting them to be in the top two probably at this stage of the season. But out of all those teams below Wolves, you know, you have to say, and you'd be wrong not to, that Derby looked like the most likely at this stage, and he's got them playing brilliantly, just a really well set up team. And I think that they're odds on favourites to be in the Premier League next season. And are Stoke odds on favourites to be in the Championship next season? I don't know. It's a tough one, that Premier League relegation battle.
Joe Crilly from William Hill, have you got any news which will alleviate the concerns of Derby County fans? What are his odds at the moment?
It's been quite a funny market, this. When it first opened, Ryan Giggs, who I think is the new Alan Kirbishley, he was favourite. He was 5-1, and he's a name that is in the top three of the betting for every job that comes around now, despite having no real discernible qualifications. And then Gary Rowett became the second favourite of the market, and now Slaven Bilic. Very late last night, we saw quite a few bets. Last night being Monday evening, we saw quite a few bets, some up to £1,000 on Bilic being named as the next Stoke manager. He went into 1-3, but he's drifted again today. He's 4-6, Rowett 4-1, and Martin O'Neill completes the top three in the betting at 5-1.
So they might be looking elsewhere anyway. That will certainly reassure Derby County supporters. For what it's worth, I'd stick around as well. I think you could do a lot with a club like Derby. Anyway, when we come back after the break, we're going to be taking a wander down the Hall of Heroes. Listeners, you like stats, and so do I. So have a bang on this one. 81% of men who try the Cornerstone Razor don't go back to their old one. I know. Find out more and get £10 off your first order and free delivery too at cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Right, a fantastic week for Football League clubs in the FA Cup, particularly against Premier League teams. So with apologies to Newport and Peterborough and teams who had fantastic results against bigger Football League clubs, we now take a wander down the Hall of Heroes for Football League teams in the FA Cup. Nice. Derby County manager Gary Rowett said he wanted to see how his players coped at Old Trafford. Pretty well, it has to be said. They were just 6 minutes away from securing a replay on Friday night before finally going down to two late goals. Shrewsbury did get a replay. They held David Moyes' West Ham to a goalless draw, and they'll go back to the London Stadium for another crack at it. And you know what? I could see him winning that as well. Norwich got a draw too. Not a single shot on target and barely a third of possession. They certainly riled Antonio Conte. The Jamie Vardy derby? Didn't even make the squad. But Fleetwood's goalless draw was a fine achievement against the title winners of 2016. They could have done better had they not hit the post. I'm not sure either of them wanted the replay, but yeah, well done to Wigan for going to Bournemouth and coming within moments of the win. But let's talk victories. Coventry City, dragged down to the basement by incompetent leadership, but still kicking away. Mark Robbins led the Sky Blues to a fine victory over Stoke City. And after what those supporters have been through, I don't think anyone could begrudge them that. But the gold medal for showing up the Premier League has to go to Nottingham Forest, conquerors of Arsenal, in a frankly hilarious encounter on Sunday. Well done, caretaker manager Gary Brazil. Top that eye tour. Right, let's turn our attention to League One as producer Tayo begins to weep softly in the corner. Tayo, have we got anthemic roundup music? Yeah, we have. It's a win at last for Charlton Athletic. After 8 games without a victory and a horribly drawn-out slide down the table, the Addicts, beat Richie Welland's Oldham at the weekend to turn the tide for Carl Robinson.
A word for Oxford United, who overcame Blackpool courtesy of a late Jonathan Obika goal. That's back-to-back wins for Pep Clatet's side for the first time since October.
We spoke about them last week, but we didn't hex them. Plymouth continued to surge up the table. Their 3-0 win over Bury was their fifth win in seven games. It's lifted them to 12th, just 7 points off the playoffs. But poor Bury, they're adrift, 11 points from safety.
And it's my pleasure to inform you that Southend are tumbling at terminal velocity. Their 3-1 defeat to Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank's Northampton was their seventh in eight games. It is not looking pretty at all.
Yeah, it's really not. Can't disagree. Northampton-Southend, one of the more interesting games from League One's limited fixture list this weekend. Let's start with Northampton, first of all. Their midfield, for a team that's been clattering away against relegation all season, is fantastic. A word should go to Justin Edinburgh, who brought a few of them in place. Matt Grimes was fantastic. He's on loan from Swansea. Gigantor Matt Crooks is a fantastic player who was at Rangers, obviously. I think he could play higher than League One. John Joe O'Toole, he's always had a lot of talent. You could tell Phil Brown had earmarked him as a danger because Southend were trying to kick him up in the air for most of the game. Yeah, they did really well. Southend, though, in a bit of a mess. Ali, you saw a bit of this, didn't you?
Yeah, I think the first thing to say is that at the start of the season, with the additions that Northampton made that you've touched on there, especially Crooks and Grimes, who are brilliant midfield players, it's always been a bit surprising that they had such a tough start to the season. So we shouldn't be too surprised when those players start to play at the level that we expect. What I was quite excited about was seeing Hildeberto Pereira come off the bench for Northampton. He was on loan at Nottingham Forest last season, and he became a sort of cult hero because he had this excellent hair. He got sent off a lot, but he was also an absolute tyro down the right flank, and he came on and set up the third goal on the counter with a great bit of skill. What struck me about this was just really shoddy defending from Southend, and also the fact that when you watch the highlights, after it went 2-1 to Northampton, basically all of the chances were Northampton's on the counter-attack. So Southend, even when trying to batter down Northampton's door, it didn't seem, and I might be wrong, that they were really ever looking likely to equalise. And along with the Lyle Ranger news that I'm sure we'll touch on, it's definitely not looking great at the moment if you're a Southend fan, is it?
Southend were missing Ryan Leonard, who's in the process, it seems, of transferring to Sheffield United. I would think that he would go with a pat on the back from everybody. He's a fantastic midfielder. He deserves his chance at a higher level. And obviously, Niall Ranger, as you say, has gone. I'm not particularly sure he should have been there in the first place, but enough on that. The thing with Southend was the lack of quality in the middle. Now, sometimes it's just in comparison to the opposition. That's where their strongest area was. But so many moves breaking down with misplaced passes. Southend, under Phil Brown, they've been a very functional team. And I don't mean that as a criticism. Sometimes that's what you have to do. And I do think he has done a good job. They've got out of the fourth division. They had, up until a few weeks ago, appeared to stabilise themselves in the third division, which is their sort of natural watermark. But they really did look to be lacking quality there. And it does feel like the fans have turned their brownout banners, shouts of brownout from the away end. It is beginning to go against him. And, all right, the first goal was a bit freakish and penalties either side, but I don't think there's any doubt Northampton deserved to win. Matt, you've been on TalkSport with Phil Brown a couple of times now, haven't you? What do you make of him? You know, aside from the usual things that get levelled at Brown, what did you make of him as a person?
I really enjoyed going on the 72 with him. He was obviously hugely knowledgeable about the Football League, and it's just a shame, really, to see. He was so optimistic when I last went on there at the start of December with him, because he was talking about putting a run of form together over December and how when they got very close to the playoffs last season, that's basically how it went for them. And yes, six defeats out of seven now. It really hasn't gone that way at all, and they're only 4 points above the relegation zone. And I think the big fear, like Ali was saying, is the defence, especially with Leonard leaving now. I know, you know, he sometimes plays at right back, sometimes plays in midfield, but their goal difference minus 14, and you're looking at the worst of any side outside of the relegation zone, and that could prove to be a big problem for them.
Yeah, it's going to need a bit of a rebuild, I think. Whether Phil Brown will be the man to do that remains to be seen. However, it should be said, Southend do tend to be very patient with managers, which is a bit of a departure from how it used to be. So he may still have a bit of time left, but there's certainly no shortage of candidates leading up behind him.
It depends if he gets the money from the Leonard transfer to reinvest as well, because it's talk of it being £750,000. And if he can sign a couple of players with that, then maybe it could turn their form around.
Yeah, well, something certainly needs to happen. Let's turn our attention to Oxford. We did have a look at, funnily enough, Blackpool against Oxford earlier on in the season when Blackpool won 3-1. We sent Matt up to the Kassam to watch him this weekend. Matt, what did you make of it?
Well, they didn't really play the progressive football that we've been talking about and we've seen a couple of times this season. To be totally honest, it was a pretty awful game, terrible weather and a miserable stadium. I really don't like the Kassam. It's this concrete dome in the middle of a giant car park and retail park, really.
Where were you sat? Because you weren't in the press box, were you? You were.
No, I was standing.
Were you in the car park on a soapbox, leaning over the fence?
I was thinking, yeah, I could probably climb on top of the chip van in the car park and watch the game from there. But I sat with the fans, and they do have great fans. Oxford always get behind their team. And first time I encountered them was at Peterborough early in the season when Oxford came from behind to win 4-1 in that match, and the fans were brilliant throughout that game. But despite them getting behind the team on Saturday, it wasn't a great performance really from the home side, I have to say. Although they did obviously get the winner, it was interesting circumstances that came about, because Jack Payne, who's usually the magician for Oxford, he didn't have the best of matches out on the right hand side of the midfield, and Alex Mowat came on with about 10 minutes to go, came off the bench, and his very first involvement, he hooked in a free kick with his first touch and set up John Obika for the winner. So I was just about getting ready to leave at that stage because I was absolutely freezing. I was thinking, there's no way anyone scoring in this match.
Nothing will happen, I'm out. Can you see him getting into the playoffs, or is this, you know, a season for Pep to figure stuff out and then move on next year?
I think that's exactly what it is. It's a transitional season. It could have been a different story actually the other day when they had Gino Van Kessel, who scored quite a few goals this season, and he had a one-on-one in the first 15 minutes of the game, and if he converted that, I think that Oxford perhaps could have gone on and put together a much more convincing victory. It was quite ironic actually that he messed up that chance, because there's a feature in the matchday programme talking goals with Gino.
And
I was just flicking through that as he missed that chance. Probably saw more block shots in that game than any other I've ever watched in my life, which explains exactly how the game went. But I thought Blackpool did pretty well, especially considering they were missing Kyle Vassell, who scored a couple of goals in that 3-1 victory over Oxford earlier in the season. They had this midfielder Ceci Dalmeida, who missed two great chances early in the second half, and he's had quite an interesting career. 22-year-old midfielder who's with Barnsley last season, but he's played a couple of games in Ligue 1 for Bordeaux, and he was with Paris Saint-Germain B too, so maybe someone to keep an eye on.
All right, Blackpool, Ali, kind of in limbo at the moment, aren't they?
Well, in free fall, I would say. They started the season so well and looked like they were flirting with the playoffs, and I think that's now only 2 wins in their last 14 games. It's quite simply relegation form, 10 points from 14. Ever since the good news came out about potentially looking more likely that some new owners would come in, which is of course what the fans are looking for, the performances on the pitch have dipped, and I'm sure that's a coincidence or for other reasons, and that their fast start was probably a bit of a hot streak, but definitely something that will be concerning Gary Bowyer, because the amount of losses in the last few months has been quite alarming, and you know they're only 5 points now above the relegation zone, and at the moment looking downwards.
Is there any sign of anyone coming in to take over?
Not that I've seen, but nice. I think there's probably still, you know, with all of these things, it never takes a month, does it? It never even takes two or three. These things, searching for the right person, making sure if you're the owner that you're getting a deal that you like, doing due diligence, it takes a long time, and they're very much in that process, I think, at the moment.
OK, let's have a quick look. Plymouth, we spoke about them last week. 3-0 winners over Bury, Matt.
Yeah, great way for Diagoraga to sign off as well. He's moved on to Fleetwood now, and he got a goal in that victory, and Plymouth up to 12th. It's incredible turnaround this season.
There was a guy on the message board that I was looking at last week who said he'd put money on Plymouth to go up. They're only, I think, 7 points off.
Yeah, there's that one playoff spot, really, occupied by Portsmouth at the moment in sixth. They're on 41 points. Bradford in fifth, 7 points above them. So there is a bit of a leap. It looks like there's that one spot to play for. And given Plymouth's momentum at the moment, you know, you can't exactly rule them out.
Yep, so many teams will consider themselves in with a shout for that, but not Bury, Ali, because Bury are 6 defeats on the bounce and 6 without a goal.
You know there's something wrong when Ryan Lowe, one of the great Football League pros of the last, well, two decades pretty much, leaves a late one in on the goalkeeper for no reason whatsoever and picks up a straight red card. The team are already 2-0 down at that point. And it seemed to be a familiar story for Bury, because if you watch the highlights, they hit the bar, they had a couple of half chances, but when push came to shove, they weren't good enough, they weren't playing as a team, and they got completely outplayed, actually, by Plymouth, who played some brilliant stuff going forward. They just had no answer for Ruben Lamirez and Kerry and Taylor, who sort of links them all together from the centre forward position. And I think that's the story of the season. They just cannot stop the opposition from scoring.
And elsewhere, there was a win for Charlton, finally. Carl Robinson, not particularly happy. He's calling for clarity. He says he's identified targets, but he can't do anything until the ownership's sorted at Charlton either. So I suspect they're going to miss out on the playoffs. But Oldham, Richie Wellens, friend of the show, we spoke to him just before he got the job. He's now six games without a win. They're only one place above the drop zone, Matt. This is his first big test, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think they've been competitive in quite a few of those games, despite going on that losing run. But, you know, they lost 1-0 to Shrewsbury in the last game before Charlton. So they're losing to sides at the top end of the division. But the interesting thing, really, at Oldham is they obviously brought Paul Jewell in to try and perhaps add a bit of experience as assistant manager to Richie Wellens then, and he's already resigned from his position. So that hasn't gone well at all.
The other interesting thing about Oldham, they've been also going through a process where there's a foreign investor who used to be an agent in Dubai who's maybe getting involved with the club, and that's taking a few months. But it appears from the signings that they made at the end of the transfer window in August and now this transfer window that he is having an effect, because they've just signed the new greatest name in the Football League, Zeus De La Paz, who is a Curaçaoan goalkeeper. Now, the thing that makes this even better is that their two goalkeepers are now Johnny Placide, who's from Haiti, and Zeus De La Paz from Curaçao. So pretty unusual, that, and shows, I think, the influence of a potential
Zeus,
foreign investor.
Right up there in the top 10 greatest footballer names ever, a list which I will always believe will be headed by the South African forward Kermit Erasmus. When we come back, we'll be playing the Fan League. Welcome back to the Totally Football League Show in association with William Hill. It's time for the Fan League. You know all about the Fan League. Get it on the App Store. Type Fan League. Very easy. Pick a win, pick a draw, pick an away win. 13 games on the slip. This week, four of them are in the Championship. Let's have a look at them now. Starting with what must be a banker for an away win, Barnsley against Wolves. Ali, any reason to believe that Wolves won't win this?
No.
Matt?
Well, they've had a couple of interesting results recently. They drew 0-0 at home to Sunderland and drew 2-2 away to Millwall. No, I'm going for a Wolves win.
Yeah, likewise. Can I, Ali, can I keep hold of Paul Heckingbottom? Because he's being linked with jobs again. Didn't obviously get the Nottingham Forest one, but it seems like every time a decent-sized club in the Championship changes their manager, he's linked.
Yeah, and they've survived, so to speak, quite a few of those over the past 18 months or so. And, you know, it looks like he will continue to be linked for those jobs. You've got to think at some point one club will take that interest to the next level. And it all comes down to him, really. He's so linked intrinsically with the team. He's from Barnsley. They've been through a lot together. But at some point, you know, that doesn't really last forever. So you would have thought that it will happen at some point, but
yeah,
perhaps not.
I'm always reminded of Steve Tilson at Southend, who got back-to-back promotions, beat Manchester United, and was, I'm fairly sure, offered a West Brom job, Nottingham Forest job, Norwich job, countless others. And he said all along, because he's Southend, Essex boy, through and through, said, no, I'm not walking away from this club. And then they got relegated, and then relegated again. And then he was briefly at Lincoln. And I haven't heard from him in a while. So make of that what you will. Next up, Hull against Reading. Hull, Matt, how did they get on the FA Cup? I missed it.
I think I missed this one too. No, they beat Blackburn 1-0. We obviously brought in quite a few reserve players, though, to freshen up the side a little bit. So I don't think you can really judge Hull too much on that performance. It hasn't really gone brilliantly for Nigel Adkins, though, since he took over. I mean, one thing that we could always say about Hull earlier this season was that they score goals. And I think in five of his six games so far in the Championship, they failed to score. So that's obviously a big problem for him.
Ali, Reading, every time it looks like they're playing their way out of trouble, they play their way straight back into it.
Yeah, the tide has definitely turned against Yapstam. It's getting quite toxic, I think, and on the weekend we saw that as well. I think they'll be happy to be playing away from home here because at the Majeski they're having a tough time at the moment. But I think for Hull it's a great time to play Reading, and I'm going to pick Hull here.
All right. Middlesbrough, Fulham. Tony Pulis seems to be settling in quite nicely at Borough. Fulham, on the other hand, I don't know, they'll make 20 chances. Will they score any of them, Matt?
It depends on AK-47, what sort of mood he's in. I can see Middlesbrough home win for this one. They got that great result against Preston the other day, ending Preston's 9-match unbeaten run. So I can see them getting another victory here.
Yeah, Ali, this is Roundheads versus Cavaliers, isn't it? And we know how that ended.
A fantastic meeting of entirely different styles. I'm going to go for a draw.
Ah, right. Finally, Nottingham Forest, Aston Villa. I'm calling FA Cup hangover here. I think Forest, having done that against Arsenal, will lose like 3-0 at home to Villa.
I'll go with new manager bounce. Ooh. And Eric Lehigh against his former club on the back of two goals in that brilliant FA Cup victory as well. Backing for a hat-trick.
All right, proper narrative war. Ali?
I'm going to agree with you, Ian. I think that Villa will win this one.
Yeah, John Terry's back, isn't he? He played in the Villa team that somehow managed to lose 3-1 at home to Peterborough.
He's not very good against small, very nippy strikers, and Jack Marriott will be hugely encouraged by the fact that he's given John Terry the runaround there.
All right, that's the Fan League. You find it on the App Store. Search for Fan League, and if you want to play along with us, search for me, Ian McIntosh, and join our Totally Football League. When we come back, League Two. Right, let's have a look at League Two. Producer Tayo, hit the anthemic music. Kaboom! That's the sound of back-to-back victories for Accrington Stanley. They wallop Chesterfield 4-0 to banish memories of that worrying five-game losing streak in December. It's just 1 point from a possible 18 for Jack Lester's men, though, and they are back in the drop zone.
Forest Green jumped out of the bottom two thanks to a debut goal for Reuben Reid against Port Vale.
It was a case of first half good, second half Jesus f***ing Christ for Colchester as their 1-0 lead over Cheltenham was turned into a 4-1 defeat. That was their first defeat since November, but also their third game without a win. Stats, eh?
In the age-old battle of the Mariners versus the Shrimps, Morecambe came out on top, beating Grimsby 2-0 to ease their own relegation fears.
Lovely stuff. Got through that without anything untoward happening. Right. Accrington Chesterfield. Ever since we covered Chesterfield on the show, I've had this weird soft spot for them because they've got so many problems behind the scenes. So many problems on the scenes. Jack Lester seems like a really decent bloke. He's taken over and tried to turn them around in his first job. And it started really well. They weren't winning games, but they should have been winning games. Then they were winning games and rising out the relegation zone. And now, my God, they're in trouble.
Yeah, well, 4-0. Thrashing at Accrington Stanley the other day, who have finally got over that little slump that they had in December and look to be pressing back towards the automatic promotion places.
And pressing, quite literally, being the way they did it. Chesterfield very much making their own problems with extended periods of titting about with the ball at the back, which, and I mean this with great affection and love and respect, they're not good enough to do. Accrington, very strong, very physical team, and just, yeah, there was only one way that was going to end. I'll tell you who I did like, though. I liked Accrington centre-back Ben Richards-Everton. 6'5", would head away a jumbo jet if it came into the penalty area. And when I looked him up, because I have to confess I hadn't heard of him before, he started his career at a club called Romulus, which pleases my inner Trekkie.
They have that terrible rivalry with Remus, don't they?
Yeah.
No, he's been a great find for Accrington, as they have to be clever with their signings, and they're doing it so well. Caden Jackson as well, who signed in the summer from Barnsley on a free transfer, and he, with a bit of game time, with electric pace, already looks like he should be playing at a higher level. So that's the way that, if you're a team like Accrington Stanley with a budget like theirs, you can start to improve the club on and off the pitch, and they're doing it brilliantly.
Yeah, it is extraordinary how well they're doing. A crowd of 1,655, which is about standard at Accrington, and they are just outside the automatic promotion places. So that's a hell of a job they're doing there. But Chesterfield, you do worry. When you get games like that, confidence drains away very quickly.
I think you can see that the contrast as well when you have goal scorers like Billy Key and Jackson in your lineup, as Accrington do. And Chesterfield have relied so heavily on Christian Dennis this season, and I think they've scored once now in the last six matches. And that's the real issue for Jack Lester at the moment. And his talk about a takeover there as well, and there's so much uncertainty about that team that the little boost that he had when he first took over just seems to be fading.
Yeah, and that takeover is going to have to happen quickly, because if it comes in after the transfer window, they're going to be playing out the back end of the season with that squad and that level of confidence. No boost of new arrivals, which, unfortunately for them, Forest Green have got. Because Forest Green, one, they're out of the drop zone, and a good start for one of their new signings, Ali.
Definitely. It's no surprise to anyone who followed non-league football that Forest Green are spending money. They had a lot of it at that level, and they're showing their capacity to get players in. They signed three players last week: Farron Rawson, Gavin Gunning and Ruben Reid, and all three of them straight into the starting lineup. What a great luxury that is for manager Mark Cooper. Two of them, Rawson and Gunning, playing at the back, and Ruben Reid scoring a brilliant debut goal. Two of those, Rawson and Reid, they've paid fees for as well. So when you look at those three at the bottom at the moment, Barnet, Chesterfield and Forest Green, you're not sure whether Chesterfield and Barnet really have the resources to be buying three first teamers at this stage of the season, whereas Forest Green are able to, and that could be the difference.
Matt, when I've watched Forest Green this season, I've always thought they're a little bit short of the quality. You watched them at the weekend. Have they just bought that quality?
Yeah, I think so. The two new defenders, Rawson and Gunning, did really well. And obviously they're up against Tom Pope, who's scored 11 goals this season. He's always a handful. I thought that was perhaps a little bit of a gamble for Mark Cooper, to be honest, by putting two new signings straight into his back five. But it paid off. I mean, they'd lost five games in a row before that, Forest Green, so they really did need a result here. And Reid, I think he's a brilliant acquisition from Exeter, especially partnering him with Christian Doidge up front. And it was actually the two that linked up in the build-up for that brilliant debut goal from Reid.
Yeah, Port Vale have been quite the form team as well. In fact, even after that result, they're still sixth in the form table in League Two, 10 points clear of the drop zone. So can't really overstate what a fantastic result that is for Forest Green. Much the same way you can't overstate what a fantastic result it was for Cheltenham away at Colchester. Ali, Colchester were winning at half-time, then what happened?
Yeah, Kyle Reid sent off just on the brink of half-time when they were 1-0 up. And from Mark Langdon, whose match report I read, it did seem like, you know, that was really the explanation for what happened in the second half.
Yeah, manager John McGreal said of the dismissal, "I don't want to hang the lad out to dry, but it was pivotal."
Yeah, and I think, as far as I can tell, it was a pretty stupid dismissal as well, pretty unnecessary, just as you're about to go in 1-0 up. And in the second half, they struggled to contain Cheltenham, who obviously charged forward and ended up with four goals. So I'm not reading too much into this result for either side, I must say.
The race for the playoffs in this division is absolutely fantastic. Just 3 points separate third place Coventry and 10th place Swindon, with the teams currently in the playoffs, Accrington, Wickham, Lincoln and Mansfield, all on 43 points. This is going to be the division to watch, isn't it, in the running?
Yeah, and I'm sure it was the same last season as well. What tends to happen is you get to the last two games and there's still 10 teams in with a chance of getting the playoff spot. So it's absolutely fantastic to follow. And luckily we'll be doing just that, of course.
Exactly. God bless you with the corporate branding. Great result for Cheltenham. Great result for Gary Johnson. He seemed really, really happy with this. Hardly surprising given that his son's been getting all the headlines recently. It's about time he got some praise as well. Cheltenham up to mid-table now. Probably going to be safe now, Matt.
Yeah, I think Cheltenham will be fine. And they've got Mohamed Issa in attack, who's scored quite a few goals for them this season as well. I think it's a bit of a worry for Colchester, though, because it looks like Sammy Smodix is going to be off to Bournemouth for a million. He's their top goal scorer this season with 11 goals, and he makes some brilliant driving runs from midfield. And three games without a win for them now has seen him drop out of the playoffs.
That's a huge move, isn't it, from League Two to the Premier League for Smodix. I mean, yeah. What an effort, and what a few months he's had since he's come back from injury.
And the final game in that division, Grimsby losing 2-0 at home to Morecambe. Grimsby have only one goal in their last six games. Ali,
Huge, huge problems with the fans and the board at the moment. A real disconnect between the two, and it's affecting Russell Slade as well. Half the fans saying, well, it's not really his fault, we just hate the board, and half the fans seeming to say, well, we actually want both of them out. It's a terrible run that they're on. They conceded laughable goals against Morecambe, both in the first half, both accompanied by huge boos from the Blundell Park faithful. So really bad vibes there at the moment. And Morecambe, every time you think that they're going to get dragged into a relegation battle, they go and record an away win. So you know, full credit to them for doing that.
Yeah, another team doing very well on very limited resources. Let's have a look then to Joe Crilly from William Hill and get a few odds. Joe, Forest for promotion. Ita Karanka announced last night as manager. Be a hell of a thing if he could take him up from where they are now to promotion in his first half season.
Yeah, definitely. And Ali touched on it. Karanka, obviously a very defensive manager, and that's probably the area that they need to sort out the most. So if they can put a run together, it's not out of the question, but the odds are 300 to 1. So
300 to 1?
Yeah, make of that what you will.
Okay, I'm filing that carefully under out of the question. Let's have a look at some of the smaller teams who made it through to the fourth round of the FA Cup, in particular Yeovil and Newport. Good draws for them?
Yeah, both cracking draws, aren't they? Both at home, Newport to Spurs and Yeovil to Man United. So, and obviously you saw it at Newport against Leeds. The pitch was a real leveller, as they always say.
There was nothing level about that pitch.
The old FA Cup cliche, as well as being a banana skin, it was also a levelling pitch. So if you want to back them both to get through to the next round, Newport are 13-2 and Yeovil are 7-1. So both very much outsiders to do so.
What can you get on a cheeky double for the pair of them to make it?
Well, let's all stick a quid on it and we'll be £60 richer.
60 to 1?
Yes.
Okay. Let's have a look then at the TV games. Corker on Friday night as Josh... Matt, you say it for me. Josh...
Lehuke.
Takes his first game, and it's the Sheffield Derby up against Chris Wilder's resurgent Sheffield United. What can I get on a good start for Joss?
Oh, they're 7-2 to win this match away. The home win is 8-11, and it was an absolute corker of a game.
Great
last
game,
time out,
it?
Wasn't it? And Sheffield Wednesday, after a shocking start, pulled it back to 2-2, and then proceeded to implode again and lose 4-2. So, and I mean, looking at it, Sheffield United haven't been in great form recently. Sheffield Wednesday may get the new manager bounce. 13-2 for both teams to score, and Sheffield Wednesday to win looks like a good one for me.
I don't think you do odds on whether games will be any good or not. I would say that's going to be very, very good. Saturday noon might not be quite as exciting, with apologies to the broadcasters for me killing that one for them. Cardiff against Sunderland. Neither team in great form at the moment. Both desperate for a win. It's going to be a scrappy one, that.
Yeah, that's right. But Cardiff, given their lofty position, despite four consecutive defeats in the league, are favourites to win it. They're 3-4, which is a price that I really do not like at her, because it just looks like a fraction rather than an actual betting price. Sunderland 19-5. I mean, there's worse prices that you could go for, given Cardiff's recent troubles in the league, and the draw 5-2.
And Saturday tea time, I feel all Elton Wellesby, Sunday's ITV, Brian Clough's Forest against Graham Taylor's Aston Villa. Not, maybe not quite, but hey, Forest Villa.
Yeah, it should be quite a good game. Forest fresh on the back of their FA Cup victory against Arsenal. 2-1 to win the game. Aston Villa 7-5 and the draw 11-5.
Thank you very much, Joe Crilly of William Hill. I tell you what, talking about that, we had lots of questions in this week. Thank you very much for all of those. Ivor on Facebook wants to know what will happen to Villa if they don't qualify for the playoffs. Matt, do you think Steve Bruce would survive that sort of thing?
Well, there's already been talk of the fans wanting him out earlier this season, and I think he'd be under a lot of pressure. To be honest, I don't know if he'd want to stick around if they
really
don't. They don't make it into the playoffs this season, because he was frustrated in the summer, wasn't he, with a lack of money to spend owing to that close FFP margin at Aston Villa. And I think it'd be the same situation again.
Ali, is there anyone in the shadows or indeed in the dressing room who might step up to take over? Maybe a big-name central defender who's just got back from a sore toe?
Yeah, John Terry in the house already, so to speak. It would be a huge problem. because the more years you spend outside the Premier League, the more diminished your parachute payments get. And Aston Villa will be in their last year of parachute payments next season. That would mean they would have to keep cutting the wage bill, keep cutting costs in order to not basically be facing financial doom and gloom a few years down the line. So, if Bruce doesn't get them to the playoffs, I cannot see him either sticking around or being invited to.
More teams under pressure. Moshi Aaron on Twitter asks, is Thomas Christensen under pressure? The owners didn't seem too happy about what happened against Newport, Matt.
Yeah, it was a pretty miserable performance from Leeds. And the owner, Andrea Radrizzani, tweeted afterwards, congratulations to Newport. And he also said that it was the lowest moment for him since he's joined Leeds.
Ouch.
So it's three games without a win for them now. And I think, it's a little bit of extra pressure on Thomas Christensen, who obviously safely navigated that run earlier in the season of 7 defeats in 8 matches and pulled Leeds through that, so he'll need to do the same again.
Yeah, it does seem like there might be an even lower moment coming very soon. Word two for friend of the show, Ed Quoth the Raven, who says, given that Forest Cup success was built on youth, which was forced on them by FA transfer embargoes, vis-a-vis, should the FA be handing out more transfer embargoes? I suspect that's not really going to help too much, but it is a sign of what you can achieve with an actual linked up far-sighted youth policy, isn't it?
Absolutely, but I think a lot of the players that impressed so much against Arsenal would have broken through anyway, such as Ben Brereton and Joe Worrell, and they've got Kieran Dowell on loan from Everton as well, who's been in great form this season. But it's an interesting idea, certainly.
Let me be the first to predict big money move to the Premier League for Joe Worrell this summer, because if there's one thing Karanka's going to do, it's make Worrell look even better, because that defence will get better. And I think Worrell will be very pleased in that sense.
Big shout there. And one more from Dean Gripton, who was on the show a couple of months ago. He asks, can Peterborough capitalise on their FA Cup glory and win at Leaders Wigan on Saturday? Ali?
I don't see why not. Peterborough on their day are absolutely fantastic team. Now, Wigan, of course, have their day more often than not, and they at their best are quite clearly the best team in the league. But if Peterborough can click, then they have the attacking players to do it. A really interesting thing from Peterborough recently was Kiefer Moore, fee agreed with Ipswich, and Grant McCann was the one to say, actually, I think that's too much. I think that the transfer outlay is too much for the club, and told Barry Fry not to confirm the deal. And now, of course, he's turned up at Barnsley. So interesting to follow that one.
Right, that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for listening today. Ali, where can we hear more of you?
You can hear more of me on the Not the Top 20 podcast coming soon with the return of my co-host from Australia.
Excellent. That is, of course, George Ellick. Joe, where can we find you on the internet?
I am on Twitter @footy_Joe for witty bants.
Head there for witty bants. Matt, anything good on the set pieces at the moment?
Well, actually, we've got the return of your Everton project, Ian.
Have we?
And that, I wouldn't say that's good. No. It's definitely not going well.
No, it's really not, and may not last much longer. If you've enjoyed the show, why not shout it from the rooftops? Give us a nudge on Facebook or Twitter or Insta Snaps or whatever the hell you people are using these days. It's always appreciated. Next week, we welcome Caroline Barker back to the studio. But until then, see you next Tuesday.
The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email us at sales@muddyneesmedia.com.
Hello there, it's James Richardson here. I don't know about you, but listening to that theme tune takes me back to altogether happier times. The ice cream, the pink newspapers, the double espressos, the hair. For those of you who don't start doodling during our Italian roundups on the Totally Football Show, well, here's some news you've been waiting for. From mid-January, we're going to be bringing you a brand new weekly podcast, keeping you up to date with the latest events from Serie A and turning the clock back to the good old days, you know, when the national team used to go to the World Cup. The name of the show? Like you didn't know already. Golazzo! The Totally Italian Football Show. You can subscribe now on Audioboom, iTunes, and everywhere else you get your podcasts.